But then I started thinking, we have all these giant rocks just lying around, not doing anything. And so you pocketed a boulder the size of a cottage and dropped it on the dragon's head from the air. I finished. Brigga, bless your inspiration, girl. That was brilliant. She beamed as I swept her into a hug. I was the first, but not the last. Several full-grown men in armor insisted on doing her honors for her bravery and ingenuity. I was relieved. The dragon was not dead, not yet, but it was senseless. While there was no telling how long it would take to regain consciousness, or indeed how it would be feeling when it did, Dara's inspired spell had done the job nicely, and far more quickly than we'd anticipated. The sun was not even completely over the hills far to the east yet, and we had run out of foes. I looked over at Rondol and Tyndall, who were looking amused and useless. You two, while it's still out, cut that chain off of its neck. Bring it with us, I ordered. Whilst they looked at each other appalled, and tried to figure out how to do such a thing, I started ordering a site for our staging area to be located. Now the battle would begin in earnest. Ahead lay 100,000 Gavanni and another dragon. The battle raged in the distance, I could see, with Alcan magic holding the hordes at bay. While a good 6 miles of icy lake lay between us and the besieged city, it seemed terribly close now. The easy part was over. Now it was up to Pentandra. I began looking around for a quiet spot, so I could prepare for the battle ahead.
Men, I think we figured it out, Pentandra said excitedly into my mind when I finally made contact with her. We looked at...
Penny, I'm as interested in this from a professional level as I could be, but right now, time is of the essence, and Thatiel isn't looking too good, I reported grimly. And we've only seen the gates. The sooner we can come to her rescue, the better. Can you counter the spell or not? And how soon?
We can counter the spell, she admitted. We have our team moving into place now. You know, you really have a knack for sucking the enthusiasm out of a girl.
I hear that from Alia more than you'd suspect. If you can counter the spell, how much time do we have?
That's hard to say. We've got most of the materials that we need now. We're just waiting on a few key magi.
We're having to get creative with some of this, she said in a tone that hinted at a lot more problems than I had time to hear about.
But give us a few hours to get into place, and then we should be able to drop it. I hope.
A few hours should be fine, I agreed. It will take us that long to get into position. I'm sure Eritas can hold out that long. We've already eliminated one of the three dragons.
Who did that? Sire Kay.
Dara, of all people. I'll explain later. We're moving into position now, and the way things have played out, we may have more of an advantage than I thought. Just keep us apprised of when you can counter that spell. We'll need to know. She assured me she would inform me. My next consultation was with Count Salgo, through one of the non-combatant high magi we'd left at Castle Gavard. I let him know we were in position to begin the final suicidal attack. I told him what to expect. He appreciated the warning. He had to deal with the reinforcements the Prince Heir was leading toward his position, before informing me that His Majesty commanded me to communicate with him at my first available opportunity. I sighed. I couldn't put it off any more. I scrounged around the goblin's camp until I found a bucket of sorts. It was empty, thankfully. Using a goblin's chamber pot to communicate with our sovereign was beneath his dignity, I was sure. I dropped the appropriate mirror stone into the bucket, once I'd filled it with water. Ice, actually, then melted by magic. It took a while, but soon the Royal Mirror Watcher, or whatever it was called, was staring up out of the bucket at me. I informed him who I was, and he ran to fetch King Rad. It didn't take long. Soon the king's bushy beard and sharp nose filled the surface of the water.
Spellmonger! His voice boomed quietly from the bucket. Where in the name of the gods have you been?
Seeing to magical affairs, Your Majesty.
What can I do for you? I've heard rumors that you have withdrawn all of our war magi from Gilmora to run off on some fool errand to save some tree folk. Did I not specifically forbid any royal troops go on that kind of idiotic quest? He demanded.
Your Majesty, I said smoothly, I heeded your order. None of your soldiers was removed from his post.
Then what are you doing with all the gods' damned war magi way over in Alsha? He demanded angrily.
The arcane orders are responding to a request for assistance from one of our colleagues and allies, I lied. I took a small party to see if we could render assistance, as our alliance suggests.
But I did not authorize this, he insisted.
Your Majesty did not forbid it either, I reminded him. This was purely a magical crisis. Therefore, it required a magical response.
And so that justifies leaving Gilmora open and unprotected.
Unprotected from whom? Your Majesty has nearly 100,000 troops stationed there.
Count Salgo informs me that interdiction efforts are proceeding admirably. The goblins north of the Poros show no signs of crossing the river. Prince Tavand closes on them even now with reinforcements. Your Majesty has the Gilmora situation well in hand. That allows me the ability to respond to our allies appropriately.
You are trying my patience, spellmonger.
I'm fighting a god's damned war right now, I snapped. Let me win it for a change, will you? If all goes well, this battle could foretell the fate of the war, but only if everything goes just so. It's a gamble, but the stakes make it a worthwhile gamble.
He looked doubtful and troubled.
It seems a foolish endeavor. What do we have to gain from it?
Have I not counseled you wisely? I pointed out. Your Majesty, trust me in this. I would not be hundreds of leagues away from my home right now if I did not feel it was a worthy gambit.
He mused some more, and I could detect a new weariness to the head that wore the crown.
I suppose you know what you are doing, he said finally. I don't suppose you'd turn around if I ordered you, would you?
Let us not consider such an unfortunate circumstance, I replied diplomatically, and earned a grudging grin. I would consider it a boon from His Majesty to allow me to continue with this.
I suppose I owe you for the magical chamber pot you sent me, he admitted. Let me know if you're alive after the battle. I'm still not happy about this. It sets a poor precedent.
So do dragons, Majesty. We defeated one already today. It's been a busy morning. We have a brace of them yet to contend with. While I am ever at His Majesty's service,
go on, fight your battle, he dismissed. Good luck, spellmonger. Don't die. I might miss you.
I stood a moment later and stretched. The sun was an hour from noon. I glanced at the icy lake where 19 of the barges were now settled. The Kasari were leading the dog teams into place, and the War Magi and Alka Alon were recasting spells to aid their progress. Overhead, a falcon flew watch, while the other birds sunned themselves on the battlements of the tower, waiting for battle. The dragon, thankfully, had yet to regain consciousness, though enough of its blood stained the pile to make me wonder if it would.
You about ready? My friend Sandoval asked me, handing me a flask.
I took it, brandy, and quite welcome, and swallowed.
Yes, I sighed, as soon as everyone is in the boats. And before someone notices that we disposed of their guard dog.
Everyone's ready, almost. We had 4 light casualties coming up the falls, so they'll stay in the tower and watch out.
We boarded in near silence, each of us mentally preparing for the battle ahead. We could not see the army directly, as it was hidden by a spur of land jutting into the lake, but we could hear it miles away. It made a low, angry groan that carried across the bare ice. It was a chilling noise, in ways apart from the obvious. 100,000 goblins can make a lot of racket. I climbed aboard the lead barge after checking on several of the others. I glanced at the sun nearing the zenith. I aimed Blizzard toward a spot over the city, 6 miles away, and activated a spell I'd prepared. It was an illusion, a photomantic display spell. A giant green snowflake hung over the entire city, suddenly. Just dancing light, but I hope it made the bastards nervous.
Oh, someone has an ego, doesn't he?
Lorcus quipped from behind me. Pentandra, I sent, mind to mind.
It's time. Do it now. I'll give the order. Good luck, Min.
Let's go, I told the Kasari driver, proud of my handiwork.
Let the madness begin.
We never had a hope of defeating their entire army. That was never the plan. The Gavani encircled the island that Anthatiel sat upon,
their lines formed up just out of bowshot. We could only see them as a thin black stain around the flanks of the city when we rounded the curve and headed out over the lake proper. But that stain grew wider and larger with every passing second. The dogs were used to pulling in harness now. They even seemed to enjoy it. With no banks on either side of them, the lake was one long, smooth expanse of ice. Even from the gates, they could scent the Gavanni, and they started baying in their huge voices as they hit their stride. Without the riverbanks, the barges need not go in single file either. We spread out into two rows, a flotilla on ice filled with fell men ready to slay. With their gaudy prows and their festive colours, the barges seemed at odds with our mission, but I wasn't preoccupied with aesthetics. The boats shivered as they approached a speed they had never dared on the Poros. Lorcus, the fool, stood on the prow, mage blade in hand, head thrown back in maniacal laughter. Crazy Remiren. Where are the lines the thinnest? I sent to Dara.
Northeast side.
She sent back a few moments later. I'm about ready to land on one of these cliffs, she added. Be careful, I warned. I needn't have worried. Frightful could land on a pebble. Circle around to the north side, I ordered the driver. The Kasari man grinned and began guiding the team. The other barges took our lead, more or less, though one ran clean over some poor Gavanni patrol dutifully marching across the ice. That slowed them down, but the rest of us continued so fast that the wind bit my face. Seeing the army from behind was disturbing. There were thousands upon thousands of angry goblins. Trolls, fell hounds, hobgoblins, siege worms, things I did not have names for. They seethed and raged against the beautiful city. Siege engines flung boulders over the frozen shoreline to crush the gorgeous architecture. But the city was fighting back, in a limited fashion. Buildings that had stood 1,000 years or more were festooned with arches. Song spells made the air over the city hazy. The goblins weren't swarming it yet. The Alka Alon's defensive spells, and their deadly skill with the bow, kept them back. Lord Eretas' city was in dire condition, but it was not dead yet. That gave me some hope. That big green snowflake had to be pissing him off, though. That made me smile. Yet the dragon was still there, crouched behind the Gavanni lines, waiting as patiently as a cat for a mouse. Far more docile, I noted, than the beast at Cambrian. That must be the effect of the snowstone, I reasoned. With it, the dragons had become far more pliable. That didn't bode well. Our barges skated a careful distance away from the horde as they rounded the eastern side of the island. I spotted the bare spot Dara had pointed out. The island had a large cliff on that side, with the buildings atop it looming so high overhead, so that attack or defense from that side was a practical impossibility. There were Alka Alon there, and there were goblins below, but neither were close enough to each other to give much of a fight. The Gavanni lines there were thinnest. There, I indicated, put us through there. We can continue around the island to the western side, in front of their lines, until we can beach. The driver nodded. Lorcus looked curious. Why try to make land? He asked. We need to be close to land, I said, close to a point where we can get into the city. We've already attracted attention, I pointed out. Which seems odd, considering how careful we were to maintain the element of surprise. Surprise is only useful if you spoil it, eventually. We want them looking toward us, away from the island, at least for a few moments. Wherein the right guards damn boats to attract attention, Lorcus remarked. I feel like we're in a bloody pageant. They aren't going to just get out of the way, warned Sandoval. The smart ones will. The stupid ones will get mowed down if they stand and fight, Talaman said dourly. If they resist, we encourage them to move. I've never charged in a barge before, Sandoval grinned, the wind whipping his hair across his face. Fellhounds coming up, warned Rondal, who was peering over the port side. Does this make us a navy? He asked suddenly. I have them, Sarakim said, stepping on the gunwale and knocking an arrow. A dozen Kasari and infantry did likewise, but they had neither Sarakim's skill nor his magic. As soon as we were in range, his bowstring twanged like a harp, and his quivers emptied at twice the rate of the ranger's. He was a one-man volley. As deadly as he was, and there were dozens of bodies staining the ice red to prove it, there were still hundreds of live goblins who proved too stupid to get out of the way. Our sledge slammed into them, the dogs snarling and biting in their harness as the war magi joined the battle from the deck of the barge. That gave us a lovely height advantage, and kept the smaller goblins from attempting to swarm over the side. The Kasari and the infantry used their spears and bows to great effect as the barge slowed. We had the opportunity for 30 seconds of mayhem against the Gavani who surrounded us before we experienced any kind of organized defense. Those were 30 bloody seconds. Flashes of the battle stuck with me later, as the barge slowed with its impact. Telemann sweeping the heads off of 3 Gavani in quick succession, Lorcus spearing a hobgoblin through the face, then using his impaled victim as leverage to sweep a bunch of his fellows off their feet and under the grinding blades of the barge. Rundal meticulously casting one blanket of magical death after another with his staff. Sayake clubbing a goblin so hard from the top of his head that it disintegrated under the force. Sandoval blasting away with a war wand in one hand, a mage blade in the other. Wenek casting spells that slew dozens at a time in horrifically nasty ways. Tyndall laughing hysterically as he decapitated 4 Gavani with his mage blade while they were trying to avoid the barge. Sarakim smiling gleefully as he coolly stood next to our Kasari driver and relentlessly sent arrow shafts amongst the viciously fighting team to slay whichever goblins might do the giant dog some damage. They didn't need a lot of help. Mostly the giant hounds picked up goblins with their jaws and shook them like weasels, or held them immobile with their gigantic paws and tore out their throats. For 30 seconds, the ice in front of our barge was a tempest of fur, fangs, growls, screams, and blood. Then they got organized. A rough shield wall tried to form on the port side, as larger hobgoblins brought heavy bronze shields up to afford some protection. A few arrows flew over our heads. There were spells active to discourage that sort of thing, and they began to fight back with spears and spells. Oh yes. There were Gavani priests among the besiegers. I wasn't in charge of the defensive spells, but I could feel the impact of incoming magic. Sporadic, at first, but the spells they threw were powerful. Flashes of light and cascades of blood-red lightning that lit up the dark ice lanced out against us from a cluster of hobs, until another barge plowed into them, spewing arrows and righteous arcane thunder into the working. A third barge split the space between us a few moments later, and the entire goblin line fell apart. It was glorious to behold. One moment, the Scrug priests were in rapt concentration, focusing on spewing arcane death in our direction, and the next, they were fighting for their lives against a bunch of really large, really angry sled dogs. The unexpected attacks and the onslaught of magic was profound. Bodies fell all around us, with very few on our side being wounded yet. When the last goblin within bowshot fell, it was time to figure out what to do with that advantage. The immediate threat was abated. Another barge careened into the fray, and another. We'd taken the thin spot and blown it open with our charge. I looked around for where we would do the most good. I had originally planned to move around the backside of the island, but something got my attention through the chaos. I brought mage sight to bear, to ascertain how Eratas defense was going. Off to our left, over a mile away, near the frozen harbor entrance to the city, the siege worms were advancing against the island in one large formation. The beasts were flanked by gigantic trolls, holding their chains, or using great bronze shields to protect the Gavani that scurried around their feet from the Alcan arrows. Others hurled stones the size of hogsheads at the defenders. A towering, elegant stone arch spanned the entrance to Anthatiel over a decorative bay. The Alka alone were making a stand there, far, far fewer than the attackers they faced. Perhaps 1,000, most transformed into larger human-like forms, were pouring arrows and songs forth from their position, while others sang together to build power for yet larger spells. There were plenty in their native forms, fighting from the shoreline, but the majority of the Alcans in the way of the phalanx of horned beasts were transgenically enchanted and armored, more or less, in human fashion. The air between the opposing forces was thick with the haze of magic. There was squiggly blackness that I figured were entrapped night sails in the middle. The Alka-Alan had apparently figured out how to deal with them the same way we had, with magical containment. That was gratifying. There were also flashes and murky portions of the harbour where smoke and evil-looking fog filled the air. Black bolts of arcane fire and jagged lanes of power leapt out from both sides. It was a full-scale magical assault. That looked like some place I wanted to be. "Talaman!" I shouted. It took the commander a moment to spare me attention. He was blasting the throat out of an enterprising goblin who had tried to board the still-moving barge. He turned toward me, a gleam in his eye. "Do you think we can get turned around and hit those things from the side?" He eyed the distant battle, yet was aware enough of his surroundings to kick another goblin in the face when it came over the side. "Certainly," he agreed. "If we wheel with that boat as the pivot and don't swing too close to shore, we might even get up some speed. They aren't moving that fast. And that looks like where the action is. I'll tell the driver and pass along the battle plan." He was interrupted by an attack on the starboard side. Fell hounds. We were moving again, not fast, but the dogs were responding to the drivers. The fell hounds were chasing us, leaping up at the gunwales of the barge. Their jagged teeth and claws scratched at the sides, occasionally finding purchase. We rallied to the starboard side for a moment to repel them and keep them away from our dogs. I transformed Blizzard into a spear and joined the fray. It was fierce work, as the fell hounds were more determined and less intelligent than the goblins. One of the white-eyed brutes managed to reach one of our dogs and snapped at its hind leg before an arrow could find it. The other dogs in the harness kept running, but turned and bit at the fell hound, sending it tumbling under our barge. "I'll get us turned around," Talaman breathed, wiping the blood off his blade. "You figure out what to do once we get there." That was a very good question. Just launching ourselves at the foe had its advantages. It was flashy, glorious, and potentially effective, if nothing went wrong. On the other hand, why not employ our advantages? I reached out to Dara, mind to mind. She was setting up on a cliff overlooking the battle, and she understood what I was asking for. While we were still trying to get the ungainly barges to turn, seven shadows darted in from the south, under the light of the gaudy green snowflake gently rotating overhead. The falcons flew in formation, all in a straight line, over the heads of the thickly packed siege worms, only a few dozen feet over their sharply curving spikes. Dara's bold skyriders flung missiles from the backs of the majestic raptors onto the troops below. I couldn't see them hit, but I could see their effect before their tail feathers swept the great arch. Siege worms, it turns out, were just as susceptible to the effects of berserker balls as goblins and trolls, but were far more terrifying. The 8 or 9 of the worms that were affected instantly turned the neatly ordered attack line into a turbulent river of violence. One worm suddenly attacked the one on its flank, or turned around and savaged the surprised face of its docile follower. Those horns were ideal for sweeping slashes, and with 6 legs and no regard for their surroundings, there was a lot of carnage. "That's more like it," Lorcus chortled, a foot on the edge of the barge, his blade over one shoulder. "Get them nice and stirred up before we hit them. I do like your style, Master Menelin." "We need to hurry," I realized. Even as the rearward ranks of the assault line dealt with suddenly berserk worms, the front lines were continuing to march toward the arcane nightmare between them and the shore. The front ranks appeared to be making every sign of preparing for a charge. "We need to hurry," I repeated, "if we don't get there soon." "We're working on it," Tyndall called. He had gone forward to help the drivers sort out the dogs, who were unused to being asked to do more than run and fight. Apparently, turning left was a challenge for their big doggy brains. That was frustrating. I wanted to be underway. Until we were, I was enjoying a boat ride in one of the most spectacularly scenic places on Kalidor. Those parts not burning, ruined, or covered in blood. Then I thought of something useful I could do. Reaching out with my sphere, I contacted Lady Fallowen, mind to mind. She had travelled into the city by waypoint, first to see to the city's evacuation, and then to its defence. She was with her father in the spire above, overseeing the battle and coordinating the magical defence.
"Master Menelan,"
she exclaimed.
"What are you?"
"I'm below with a small army," I informed her. "We made it all the way up the Poros, and past the first dragon. Not bad for a motley band of ephemeral sparks, huh? And it isn't quite lunchtime yet," I quipped. I loved teasing Fallowen for some reason. Her noble character just encouraged it. "How fare your people?"
"We endure,"
she replied proudly. "We have taken hundreds of casualties, and great parts of the city are damaged. But Anthatiel endures." "When will the aid from the other Alcan lords arrive?" I asked.
"They are not coming,"
she replied sadly.
"Master Haruthel has sent all the warriors he is going to, as have the other houses. We are on our own."
"Not entirely," I replied. "Please inform your father that I am preparing to charge the shock troops on his front door. If we hit them hard enough, we might slow them down."
"Menelan, that's suicide. You have not the strength for such an attack. I cannot permit it."
"We're about to find out, aren't we? I wasn't asking for permission. I was informing you of my battle plan. But have your father pull his troops back off the ice while we charge. They can wade in afterwards, if we leave anything for them." I tried not to think about the dragon. I was playing cocky to install some hope and confidence in Fallowen. Dragons have a way of sapping your enthusiasm. "Besides," I continued, "they don't stand a chance. I brought a secret weapon."
"What?"
"Sir Riff," I replied. "He's often said that he'd wade through a sea of goblins to rescue you. I plan on giving him the chance."
"Sir Riff? You brought Riff?"
"I have no desire to be rescued, Mage Lord, nor any need." She sounded appalled and embarrassed, but also something else.
"How many of you are there?"
"Only around 3,000, but it's a robust 3,000. I explained just who had accompanied us, besides Sir Riff. Fallowen was impressed, but she focused on her own folk's plight.
"We have endured,"
she repeated,
"but my father is weary. So are most of our great ones.
We win every engagement eventually, yet we still are losing the battle. They have breached our defences several times. There are already thousands of Gavanni roaming the empty streets. The few of our people who are left are being hunted in their own city. Father himself had to go out and face down the dragon the last time it dared attack. Meanwhile, the other one destroys our communes and orchards on the lakeshore." "Just let them know we're coming. Pull them back off the ice until we get there." There was a pause, while I was assuming she was relaying the directives. Then she returned.
"I have done as you have asked, Mage Lord,"
she said solemnly,
"and I must also pass along the sincerest appreciation by my father. He shed tears, Menelan, tears of gratitude that of all his kindred, the feral Humani alone came to his aid in his time of need. In 100 years, I have not seen him so moved."
"Tell him that is what allies do," I replied. Something darkened the sky overhead, and I saw the raptors streak back toward the assault for another pass at the horde. The barges were starting to get themselves turned, too. "You might want to find a seat near a window. This should be interesting to watch." Chapter 34. The Defense of Anthatiel. Our flotilla of barges did not pick up near the speed, trundling between the goblin lines and the island city as we had moving over the open ice. Momentum played a role, but we'd also lost some dogs. We used the opportunity to blast the Gavanni line's broadsides, with spell and shafts, as we were pulled past them, another opportunity for Wenwick to use his nastiest offensive spells. We took some hits in return too, though. Two barges collided, their teams entangled, inspiring the horde to rush them. They had a hard time fighting their way out, but another barge skated by in time to lend some aid. In another case, the long iron skate of a barge snapped as it turned, leaving the men stranded near where we'd first broke through the line. Master Thinraddle and Master Cormoran were in that boat, among others. I wasn't worried about their safety. And yet another barge was molested by trolls, who attacked it first with stones, and then with a long chain that entangled the runners and dogs. That barge had been damaged, the hull crushed by a charge from two siege worms. The Kasari inside used the wreckage as cover as they defended their lives, and the dogs. They took a special vengeance on the trolls for harming the giant dogs. The rest of us couldn't afford to turn around and go back. It had been hard enough to get the flotilla turned the first time. This was a singular opportunity to affect the battle, and every barge we had needed to deliver troops to the right spot. "This is going to get bloody," Sayakay said darkly, as the flank of the battle line of siege worms got larger in the distance. I glanced at the clusters of dead Gavani and the occasional troll on the port side, each with a white alken arrow protruding from them. They bled all over the ice, the pools of blood freezing solid as the vital substance came in contact with the enchanted lake. There were Alka Alon bodies scattered about too, fewer in number but no less bloody. This siege had been going for days, I remembered. The frozen lake kept the battlefield from stinking as badly as usual. "It's already been bloody," I sighed. "You can see they have broken through in places," Rondal remarked, nodding toward a spot on the island off the starboard side where a dead worm lay, covered in little black furry bodies. More of them were moving further into the city, I could see, as they clambered up walls or fought with Alka Alon in the interior. And Thatiel was breached. This was going to be a hell of a mess to clean up. "We should spread out and hit as much of the line as we can at once," Tarleman counseled. "Each barge ram into it as hard as they can, then disembark and attack." "I like the lack of subtlety in that plan," Lorcas agreed, nodding. "What do we do after that, though?" "Head for the shore," I decided. "We came here to shore up their defenses. Let's keep the Scruggs out of the plumbing and off the front gate. Once you've slain everything you can reach, make for shore." "I'll pass that along," agreed Tarleman, who closed his eyes to do so. "What about the Sky Riders, Master?" asked Tyndall. "They can't keep raining down berserker balls. We'll be amongst them soon enough, and the last thing I want to see is Mage Lord Azar acting without restraint." "An excellent point," I agreed. I contacted Dana again. "Can you get your squadron to turn its attention to any command centers for a moment while we interrupt their assault?" "I think they can do that," she agreed. "There's an actual canopy on the south side of the island, surrounded by worms and comfortably away from even alken arrows. There's a lot of magic happening there, too. Have them snatch up anyone who looks important and dump them on the island, from a couple of hundred feet in the air. Can they manage that?"
"Just like hunting rabbits in the Westwood back home," she agreed. "Oh, I'm about ready up here."
"Now would be a good time to deploy," I agreed. I could see the line of worms distinctly enough to count them without using mage sight now. I had minutes. "Yes, go ahead and do it. Good luck. And I'll see you after the battle, Dara."
"The Sky Riders are going after the Gavani headquarters," I announced. "That will keep them out of the way and hopefully interfere with their command structure."
I glanced around. Everyone had that tense anxiety on their faces that you get when you're about to face your own violent death.
"Everyone, it's been an honor and a pleasure," I offered. "When we get there, don't just be content with killing your own siege worm and moving on. Help your comrades with their siege worms too."
"Plenty to go around," added Lorcas.
"Duin's blessing on us all," bellowed Sayakay,
who got a little more religious, I'd noticed, when he was going into battle, which reminded me of something. I summoned a flame cantrip on the tip of my finger, and the tiny curl of fire danced in the cold wind.
"If you're listening," I said softly into the fire, "now would be an excellent time for some divine intervention."
I waited a moment, added a childhood prayer to the bright one in my head, and let the flame go out. Just in time, too.
"Trolls ahead!"
Sarakim called out from the bow. I took a look. Sure enough, a ragged line of the massive Halka Alon warriors, slaves of the dead god all, had brought their table-sized bronze shields into a crude wall to protect the battle line. It would not stop us, I figured, but it would make things very interesting. Everyone ready! I shouted, and then summoned Blizzard's short spear point. Twilight hung over my right shoulder. I had wands and a dagger at my belt. My armor was keeping me warm, for once, instead of making me sweat my ass off, and I'd barely killed anything at all yet. I smiled. I found I was looking forward to this battle. I'd been a commander so long that I felt a tremendous need to indulge in some cleansing violence, and if there was ever any time for such an indulgence, it was facing such ridiculously overwhelming odds. I just hoped the dragon didn't get involved too early. That might complicate things. Ready! My apprentices, Lorcus, and everyone else within earshot agreed. The line of trolls grew closer and closer. 100 feet. 50. 20. 10. And close enough to smell them. And then Sire Kay was standing in the prow, swinging his new warhammer, like Duin himself. The meteoric iron head hit the center of the nearest troll's shield on one edge, so hard its entire body was spun around, its great arm broken, and its shield savagely bent with the force of the blow. The dogs slowed a bit as we passed by the huge defenders, but then sped up as they saw the rest of the foes beyond. When we got within 50 feet, the Kasari drivers untied their clever knots and let the dogs slip free, not just of the barge, but of their harnesses. With the loosing of 2 knots, the entire team of giant dogs was suddenly free and independent, and it didn't take them long to notice that. They quickly spread out in a wide line in front of us, actively trying to get at the huge worms ahead. Before they managed that, the Kasari replaced their reins with weapons, and were as ready to fight as I was. You cannot help but admire the Kasari adeptness at such feats. We all held our breath as the barge slowed, but still carried enough momentum to put us into their lines. Ours was one of the first to hit near the front of the line, close to the flank of their active assault. I had some of the best warriors with me, and I wanted to put them where they would do the most good. The barge ploughed through the first 2 ranks of Gavani too slow to get out of the way, and several got pinned against the side of the siege worm whose central right leg stopped us, finally, much to their detriment. As the barge slowed, however, it got lighter. The war magi inside were leaping out, weapons ready, and plunging viciously into the line. The ice was covered in goblins trying to press forward. Most of them probably never knew we were coming, and we took advantage of that surprise. As soon as the barge slowed enough for me to pick out a target, a particularly tall hobgoblin infantryman, I leapt from the gaudy gunwales and plunged my spear into the back of his neck from above. I felt, rather than saw, Tyndall, Rondell, and the rest of my household leap after me. I did hear the peal of a horn, and then a bellowing cry of "Sevendor!" from Sire Kay before he jumped into the fray. There were others leaping too, but in his dragon-scale armor and wielding that deadly hammer, Sire Kay was decidedly a focal point. Then it was just blood, magic, steel, and chaos. All around me, Gavani and hobgoblins turned to face me, as we squared off between the legs of the worms around us. Time froze as I activated my combat enhancements, and the gruesome work of war magic began. A spear through a chest, a blast from a wand that obliterates a face, a whirl and a slice through a Gervan's hamstring, finishing the blow through the neck of his mate, a kick in the face for one wee goblin who charged me with a knife, then a boot on his face while I blasted another with a suddenly reversed spear, a wave of a wand that sent a concussive blast through a crowd of attackers, hurling them into the tail of a worm, who is not pleased at the disruption. The haft of my spear clubbed one infantryman across the eyes, while the return swipe pinned one furry fellow's hand to his mate's shoulder. A fiery blast from the head of my staff ended their suffering. Around me, Tyndall was dueling a shaman, mage blade, and staff, while Rondell was guarding my back with a round shield and wand, ducking, firing, and constantly assessing the situation. Lorcus danced through the crowd with his blade like a jongleur, stabbing at eyes, slitting throats, and puncturing lungs with effortless ease and a maniacal grin. Telemann hurled one goblin into others, then seeded the ice with magical blue flame to incinerate them. Wenek used his mace like a wand and his war wand like a club as he blasted goblin, worm, and troll with equal ferocity. Sire Kay made it his mission to combat the worm infestation. Wherever he could, he plied his mighty hammer against the gigantic beasts. He quickly learned that a single, sharp blow to their nose horn was often sufficient to send the monster insensible, or to kill it entirely. I saw him peel the horn right off one nose when he did not throw his blow just right. The creature bellowed angrily and responded reflexively by charging into the rear of the next worm in line, causing itself a whole new world of pain. But we were taking casualties too. Several of the Kasari were down, as were a few unlucky war magi. The shock of our attack had been disruptive, but it hadn't kept them from fighting back. Sandoval's right arm was bloody under his armor, and he'd switched his sword to his left hand. Mage Lord Farandal's scalp was bloodied, and he seemed to be fighting in a daze. Randall had a scratch to his head, and Telamon took a nasty blow to the side of his shoulder that sent him spinning. We helped him back up, and we kept fighting. It didn't take long for the Gavanni to reinforce their line, of course. That's when things got really chaotic. I lost track of time for a while as I defended myself and worked out a lot of frustrations with destructive magic. The goblins just seemed to keep coming, and I didn't seem to be running out of energy. Every new ugly face was another opportunity for me to express myself about the king, and the censorate, and the queen, and the Isseli situation, and the Alia situation, and I lost some time after that. At some point in battle, your conscious mind steps back, and you become a creature of reflex. Well-trained, carefully controlled reflex. I was consuming power with abandon from my sphere, keeping me moving and keeping me killing, and I felt alive in a way that can be achieved few other ways. That's when I felt something whir by me. At first, I thought it was a falcon, but it was far too small. Then I thought it was a thrown axe or something, when I realized what it was. Dara's thoughtful knife had finally arrived. It was an Alka Alon artifact, ancient in origin and considered quaintly antique by the tree folk. It was a relic of a bygone age, when the Alkan lords dueled with armies of devoted allies and followers. The insanely sharp, nearly indestructible wedge flew by magic, and was controlled remotely by a competent mage. In this case, an excited, vengeful 14-year-old girl. The knife zoomed by us, and began tearing into the Gavanni infantry that assailed us. Sometimes it got dangerously close, but Dara's missile was adeptly managed. It slew dozens of goblins in seconds. She made it fly circles around us, tearing through the soft flesh of the Gavanni like a hot cheese knife. No armor seemed to be able to stand up to its relentless path, not even the thick hides of the worms. Dara began targeting the beasts who had yet to be engaged, keeping their handlers, and the Gavanni unfortunate enough to be in their way, too occupied to mount another wave against us. Mostly. There seemed no end to the goblins. As soon as Dara would mow down one line of them, another would rush up to fill the void. The ice was becoming clotted with frozen blood and fresh corpses. One thing I was certain of. We messed up their assault. The magical cloud of spells and counterspells between the two sides was lopsided now, and the Gavanni had stopped trying to plunge through it to get at the Alkan warriors beyond. I meant to give them some respite, some opportunity to fall back and regroup and redouble their defense. We were to be a distraction. A big, ugly, violent distraction. Only the Alka Alon chose to use the opportunity to cross through the cloud themselves. 5 minutes after our barge had smacked into a worm, I was standing nearby two tall, transformed Alkan warriors bearing gracefully curved spears, and using them with deadly precision. The Alka Alon may have been rusty at the art of war, but, apparently, they were starting to remember how to fight for their lives. "How fares the gates?" I called slowly to one of the nearby warriors. He tossed me a glance and apparently saw the sphere floating over my shoulder, and recognized me. "Well enough, friend of the Alka," he called back hesitantly, "but the Gavanni have reached the residential quarter of the city and fortify themselves. Already their shamans are gathering inside as they gain the walls." "One crisis at a time," I grunted back, impaling yet another brave but stupid goblin through his abdomen. "Where stands the Lord Eratas? I would have words with him." "He commands the field from his tower balcony now," the Alkan warrior reported, looking around for more foes.
Twice they've sent the dragon against the Tower of Vision, and twice we've beat it back. Wherefore are our kindred? Why have they sent no aid? He demanded, seemingly offended that it was mere Humani who had miraculously arrived.
Take it up with the council,
I agreed.
I got my invitation. I even brought friends. Ishi's tits, it looks like they're preparing another wave,
I pointed out. We had some cover from two worm corpses that had conveniently died near the barge, making a kind of gruesome redoubt for the moment. Their infantry was rallying a few yards away, which was difficult, since Sarakim was still aboard the barge, shooting anyone who looked like a leader or officer in the face. While the Mawini archer assisted in the promotional opportunities in Sharul's army, my men prepared for the inevitable charge.
There are an awful lot of them,
Rondol said, his chest heaving from exertion. He sheathed his sword and leaned on the pike he'd picked up from somewhere.
How long are we going to keep this up?
Until we run out of them,
Tyndall supplied, stripping off his helmet to let his dirty blonde hair free.
They're just getting started. This is going to be as bad as a sausage grinder.
He sounded only partly enthused by the prospect.
They have ample resources,
the Alcan warrior agreed.
We have been fighting for days, day and night, without stop, with no help of help, until the Humani came. I am Hasuef, warden of the second house.
Minolin, Baron of Sevendor, called the Spellmonger,
I nodded back, respectfully.
These are my men. We're here to help, to fight next to you against our common foe.
The Alcan nodded to the siege worms Sire Kay had slain.
You clearly know how to fight,
he acknowledged.
It is said that is what we are best at, I affirmed, and we made it this far,
I pointed out.
So you have. Prepare yourself, Spellmonger,
Hasuerth instructed me grimly.
Soon they will send the dragon. Let us die well together.
That was not exactly the pep talk I was looking for. The Gavanni chose to attack our position before I could come up with a witty retort. Several trolls had joined the hobs and goblins who faced us now, and I prepared myself for another extended journey through a slow-motion world of war magic. After the augmentation spell took hold, I was gratified to see the lead elements of the goblins got snatched up by a pair of our giant dogs, who held their screaming bodies triumphantly in their huge jaws and pranced around before tearing them to shreds. The rest made the gap between one dead worm's head and the other's tail, where my apprentices, Sayake and Lorcus, stood guard. The melee was severe, made bloodier by the number of foes who fell to archers as they entered the gap, until the first troll pushed aside the tail and struck Rondol so hard in the chest with his club that it sent the boy flying. That's when things began to move away from our favor. The very worms that provided our cover also made it difficult to maneuver, and that emboldened the enemy. Another troll crowded his way in, ignoring a slash to his thigh from Tyndall before he turned to face Sire Kay. The dragon slayer did not shrink. He pulled his dragonhide shield in front of him and cocked his hammer back far. He began the scream before he began the swing, and took two steps before slamming the black head of his hammer into the troll's midriff. I suppose the beast figured that it could withstand a blow from a mere human, and arrogantly declined to block or dodge the blow. The hammer cut him in half, spraying his fellows behind him with a smear of his innards. Both halves of the body fell to the ground in front of the Wilderland's knight with an awful, indescribable noise. He stared at the other trolls who threatened to overwhelm our position as the limbs of their mate twitched desperately on the blood-stained ice in front of them. They halted, their faces filthy. He growled.
Let the mightiest of you advance,
he called to them. I don't know if they understood him or not. Probably not. But smearing your mate's intestines off your face will make a troll think for a moment.
Wounded into the barge,
Turlaman ordered, as he helped Rondal to his feet and passed him to a Kasari medic. Alscott the Fair was impaling a hobgoblin behind him, one leg trailing blood with every step.
Protect the wounded,
he cried, turning to separate a troll from his kneecap with a wand I hadn't seen him draw under his cloak. Sire Kay obliterated the jaw of a troll with a deft uppercut, while Rustalo,
when did Rustalo arrive?
Impaled another in the thigh with his blade.
Concussive blasts went off behind me, telling me that Wenek was in my vicinity, but the trolls just kept coming. We were fighting them to a standstill, when suddenly I heard a high, piercing whistle. Everyone in the area paused to see what the source of it was. It was Lorcus. He was standing on the back of one of the dying worms, his sword reversed, and his left hand waving elegantly in the air. For a second, all the combatants stopped.
"Gentlemen," he said, grinning widely, "my good trollish gentlemen of the Shadow Realm, thank you for your attention. I need it for just a moment. Let me ask you, can you scratch your balls?" he asked evilly. I felt his spell detonate, and suddenly the brute I faced found his huge hammer falling to his feet. I watched the moment of panic on the creature's wide face as it realized that it could not, indeed, scratch its own balls, or do much anything else of importance. It was an excruciatingly delicious moment of enjoyment, watching a foe go through that. I probably would have enjoyed it more if the ice between my feet had not chosen that moment to instantly liquefy. It was an odd feeling, the moment it happened. One second, my boots had hard purchase on the solid ice, and for one fraction of a second, after the surface glimmered and then went dark, I and everyone around me were standing on the surface of a very liquid lake. My head jerked up, likely with a similar expression of panic as the troll had worn. My eye caught his, just as his own expression transformed from panic to terror, and we both succumbed to gravity's fickle relationship with solid displacement. We sank. Everyone sank. I struggled in startled panic as I tried desperately and futilely to orient myself. My mouth had been open when my face made contact with the freezing water, and I swallowed it reflexively. The perils of being in full armor in a freezing cold lake, with a bunch of panicked trolls and goblins, quickly became apparent. A great shaggy foot kicked out at me through the water and threatened to overwhelm me as my armor drew me under. I couldn't have that. I was the spellmonger. Getting killed in battle was one thing. Getting drowned in battle was another. They don't make sagas about that sort of death. Not after surviving dragons. Not after charming goddesses. If nothing else, it was an affront to my dignity. Yet those are the mad thoughts that passed through my mind, as I realized that there was more water above me than below me. That would not do. I'm sorry if it disappoints you about my character, but that's what happened. It did make me mad, however, mad and determined. If an emotional reaction to a perceived injury to my ego was what motivated me, I could care less. It worked. I quit struggling. I acted. I reached out my hand and, without looking at it, summoned Blizzard. The knot coral in the weapon responded instantly, and in a few seconds I had my weapon, my tool. I focused on the shaft, even as I sank, and released a spell I knew would be useful. Suddenly I shot to the surface as if I had been dragged by a fishing line. I glanced around wildly as I sputtered and breathed, my staff held in one hand while I tried to tread water with the other. The surface was churning with others struggling just as much as I was, as far as the eye could see. Everywhere, except the barges. Deprived of ice below them, they floated admirably, gaily painted promises of refuge. Already my men were helping their fellows aboard, while the goblins and trolls sank and churned the water. I reached out with raw power and drew myself to the barge through the water. I stuck my staff up into the air and waved it. And before long, strong hands pulled me, coughing and wheezing, into the boat. Rondal and Sandoval were there, as were a score of Kasari, and more were helping other war magi up all the time. I immediately transformed my own staff into a hook, handed it to Rondal, and then began summoning a water elemental. It was hard here for some reason, perhaps because of the recent ice magic, but slowly an entity formed in response to my call, and accepted the arcane architecture I offered it in exchange for its cooperation. Soon it was moving as I directed, helping herd struggling armored survivors into the barges. Most survivors. The few Gavani who managed to cling to the boat were clubbed away until they drowned, else they were shot or stabbed until they perished. Our goal was to rescue the humans and Alka Alon.
I had just dispatched the first elemental and was preparing the second when two huge paws thumped onto the deck, and a bedraggled Sire Kay was hauled into the boat by one of the largest of the sled dogs I'd seen, a shaggy brute who started to tenderly lick the Dragon Slayer's wet face as soon as she set him into the barge. A few moments later, Turlaman joined us, and then Tyndall. One by one, our folk were brought in. I stood back to catch my breath and surveyed the scene, mere minutes after I had been poised to slay a troll. The water was ceasing to thrash, now that most of those who could not swim were dragged below, which included, apparently, the vast majority of the trolls and Gavanni, as well as the siege worms. The fell hounds, alas, swam as well as their giant counterparts. Sarakim slew several whining mutts as they tried to make their way onto the safety of the ship. The Alka alone could not swim well either, apparently, although later I found out that most of the folk of Anthathiel had at least attempted the practice in their beautiful lake. Luckily, they were a tough and resilient folk, even in human bodies. Many who had been close to the arch had been in or close to shallows, and others had struggled to safety. Most who survived the melting of the ice were able to make their way to shore or safety. But most of the 100,000 goblins who had besieged the fair city after their grueling trek up the icy length of the Poros perished utterly in a few moments of stricken panic. The grand army of Shurul, including his huge siege engines and terrible worms, had sunk beneath the black waves of the lake in the space of moments. The army was destroyed. The city was saved. The Poros could flow free again from here to the river's mouth. That was a victory, if nothing else came from this day. Pentandra had prevailed, with a little help from Brigga, I suspected.
"The wizards did it,"
Sire Kay sputtered, coughing up filthy lake water.
"Gods be praised! They did it!"
"Damn right she did it," Tyndall agreed. "Lady Pentandra can do anything."
"What's now, master?" Rondal asked, as he stumbled over to me. He was dripping wet and shivering, but so were we all, everyone except the big shaggy mutt who had rescued Sire Kay and seemed determined to stake a claim to the man. She panted contentedly, as if a rousing swim after a life-or-death fight, following a week of extended physical effort, was just the perfect life for a dog of her breeding. I looked toward the arch. The Alka Alon were regrouping there, helping each other out of the water. But there were also a lot of Gavanni and trolls who had been standing over shallows when the lake had melted back again, and they were frantically trying to get out of the water. It wasn't so much an assault as a panicked mob at the beach, armed with steel.
"There," I ordered, pointing my staff decisively. "Let's get everyone ashore. Start cleaning up this mess. Find out how many we lost."
Someone summoned another water elemental to push the ungainly craft through the filthy water toward the decorative bay. We picked up dozens of survivors along the way, including Lorcas, who had ridden on the back of his dead worm until it settled on the bottom, leaving the war mage in waist-deep water. I helped him aboard and gave him a hug.
"Hell of a fight, Spellmonger," he assured me happily, "and a hell of a trick."
As I gratefully accepted a flask from him and took a sip against the chill that was seeping through my armor and into my bones, I heard a loud shout behind me over the now constant lap of waves against the hull. I looked up to see a bright green and gold barge with a familiar figure on the prow. Azar. He was in his black armor, hefting his great sword with Master Cormoran and Onranyan at his side. So were a knot of my Bovali, the Sevendori warriors I'd brought with me, who were shouting my name, as well as Sevendor and Boval.
"Are you quite finished with your bath?" he asked impatiently. "Couldn't kill all of them, I see. Had to leave some straggling behind."
"I could not deprive you of your entertainment, could I?" I pointed out. 30-1 are hard odds, even for you. 10-1 seems much more sporting."
"You have a point," he called.
"Let's get everyone up there then and finish this mess. I need to find Lord Eritas," I decided, "and Lady Fallowen. I heard that they were on a tower balcony above the arch."
"Then they got a magnificent view of our victory,"
Azar nodded, "and they will be able to witness our eventual triumph over those waterlogged scrugs."
Both barges were moving toward the harbour, where the Gavanni had taken to one side and the Alcaalon to the other. We sailed toward our allies, but our enemies did not look particularly formidable right then. The Gavanni were not firing bows, if they had them,